So I'm a fan of lyrics, and so before I play the next song, which is Megadeth's Breadline, these are the lyrics. Ain't got no job, ain't got no smoke, ain't got no car, ain't got a car. His life's a joke, living on the skids, thinks the world's just fine, forgot what he did, dancing on the breadline. No one there to bind him, nothing to remind him, nowhere left to find him. About to lose his lifeline, he's dancing on the breadline. Forgot who he is, forgot who he was. Used to call the shots, now he can't connect the dots. A mover and a shaker getting closer to his maker. Lower than a hemline, dancing on the breadline. No one there to bind him, nothing to remind him, nowhere left to find him. About to lose his lifeline, he's looking for a headline. Sniffing up the white lines, he's dancing on the breadline. Watch him dance. About to lose his lifeline, he's looking for a headline. Sniffing up the white lines, he's dancing on the breadline. No one, nothing, nowhere, the breadline, dancing on the breadline, dancing on the breadline, he forgot, and he ain't got nothing.
Ain't got no job, ain't got no smoke.
And here's a, I guess I'd call it a conservative website, Berkeley Side, which has an article of Berkeley City Council tells RVs to hit the road March 1st by Natalie Orenstein. Recreational vehicles will have to roll out of town soon per a citywide ban on overnight parking. The Berkeley City Council voted Thursday to enforce a prohibition on parking from 2 to 5 a.m. while developing a permitting system exempting some RVs for 2 weeks each year. Officials promised a packed room at Thursday's special meeting that they're still looking into a location for a trailer park somewhere in the East Bay, too. One of these days. The decision came after 2 hours of passionate public comment, with RV occupants telling the council they simply can't afford any other housing and have nowhere else to go. Some owners of homes and companies in West Berkeley, where most of the RVs are clustered, applauded the ban, saying health and safety issues have come up around the vehicles, scaring away business. Now, you got to make up your mind. Is it health and safety, or is it scaring away business? I suppose it could be both, but it sounds like they're just piling on here. But then again, I'm not a fan of RV parking bans. Continuing to read this story, Thursday's vote concluded discussions that began a year ago when many RVs had been parked for months along Marina Boulevard. The city received safety complaints from marina visitors and the neighboring DoubleTree Hotel and eventually kicked the vehicles out, building parking spaces for smaller cars in their stead. An intentional attempt to deny them future access is my analysis. And, of course, we don't have the specifics about the complaints, just the vague safety complaints. The RV inhabitants, several of whom have formed a group called Berkeley Friends on Wheels, relocated to the nearby former His Lordship's parking lot. When the city gave them a week's notice there, too, citing a provision of the state land grant requiring Berkeley to use the marina for waterfront-related purposes only, at least a couple dozen ended up around 8th and Harrison Streets, lining a few blocks. And I believe I went down there and interviewed them some months ago and played that interview on free radio. Berkeley police have counted around 200 RVs throughout the city. While I'm very sympathetic to the challenges people are facing, we have to question at some point, how much more can we as a city accommodate, said Mayor Jesse Arguin at the meeting. That is, of course, the mayor elected as a progressive. And I guess the issue is not how many more can they accommodate, but how many more can they get rid of? Because it sounds like a total ban that they are putting into place here. But that's just my initial read from this story and also from words that I got from analysis from Mike Zint, who we're going to be hearing from shortly, too. In September, the council directed city staff to look into options for managing RV parking. Managing. Nice language for banning, perhaps. Staff came back with two proposals Thursday, a ban on parking from 2 to 5 a.m. and an online 14-day permitting system. The overnight parking ban already applies to commercial vehicles, and the definition has already been interpreted to apply to RVs in the past, but the amendment makes it explicit. Bad options, staff said, both options, staff said, would be paired with new resources and services offered to RV dwellers. Yet, they don't seem to be included in the resolution, or at least it's not mentioned yet. Berkeley Police Lieutenant Randy Files said his research turned up no cities with model approaches to similar issues. Most surrounding cities have bans on long-term RV parking, but few actively enforce them or act more aggressively, he said. No one wants to be the one getting attention for being the ones driving people away, Files said. Oh, I don't know, Seaside, Marina, Salinas. Santa Cruz didn't mind until we sued them in the Coastal Commission. The city council ended up passing an all-of-the-above option with the overnight ban and the permit and directed staff to seek out private lots like churches that might allow RVs to park for months at a time, so long as the owners are engaged in city homelessness services and trying to get housed, a suggestion made by Councilwoman Sophie Hahn. And that's always their sort of nice out when they say, if you're looking for housing, which doesn't exist, that's fine. But, of course, if it doesn't exist, what's the point of looking for it other than to pretend that such things do exist, so to take the heat off of city bureaucrats and politicians who don't want to look bad with egg on their faces for then going after homeless people in camps and RVs, who have no place else to go, not to mention violating court decisions like Martin versus Boise, which says you can't go after them unless you have shelter for them, which they don't have. Even when people provide their own shelter, such as RVs, it's clear, even in such a so-called allegedly liberal city as Berkeley, which actually hasn't been liberal for years, has a similar undeserved reputation like Santa Cruz's, you have this pretty clear gentrification attack on poor people who are homeless or who are in vehicles, and frankly, tenants as well, who are getting zoned out, priced out, and rent raised out. Rashi Kasarwani, whose district includes the largest cluster of RVs, said she's talked with inhabitants, including families with kids in Berkeley schools, as well as concerned businesses, and hears daily from frustrated neighbors. She says she wants everyone in our community to have a safe place to be. It really does bother me that cities like Berkeley are put in the impossible position of having to balance the needs of all the groups on its own, she said, but we need to manage the immediate situation in West Berkeley. Of course, it doesn't really specify what that immediate problem is, except that it seems to justify what now appears to be a 6-3 vote. The item passed 6-3 with council members Cheryl Davila, Kate Harrison, and Rigel Robinson voting against it. Davila previously tried to refer the issue back to a council policy committee, but didn't get enough votes. Robinson said, "I can't find it in my heart to kick unhoused people out of town without giving them an alternative." "As little as I may be able to sleep after this, I'll have the privilege of doing so in a bed," he said. The 14-day permit he called a vacation, not a safety net. "Y'all put us in the streets of Tesla." On a rainy morning earlier this week, 20 or 30 RVs and vans snaked around the corner of 8th and Harrison Street near the new Tesla service center and in front of a pottery studio. Curtains covered most of the vehicle's windows, but a couple of people came in and out of their trailers and motorhomes throughout the morning. Frank Calloway, who lived in an RV in Berkeley for almost a year, said that morning that he'd be out of here if the council approved the overnight parking ban. He plans to head back home to Ohio. There's a bumper sticker that says, "Home is where you park it." He regrets ever getting off at the university exit when he came out west, he said of his fellow RV dwellers, "But this is my community now." Calloway said the group was content to be out of the way of residential and commercial areas while at the marina, but the complaints were inevitable when they were forced into the city's neighborhoods. "Y'all put us on the streets of Tesla. We're playing with people with lots of money," he said. At one point, Calloway thought the RV cohort should buy some communal land nearby, but this is Berkeley. The dirt's expensive. Parked next to Calloway, another man who didn't want to give his name said he and his wife have always been resigned to following the rules. Sometimes they've moved their RV daily and even hourly during a period when the 2 to 5 a.m. ban was enforced, he said. He has lived in Berkeley for 5 years and this morning was getting on his bike to go to his auto engineering job. "For the most part, most of us do this because we're trying to save money or make a living," he said. "You can fault people for being annoyed, but ask to be given a little slack. We're not here to bother anyone. We can bend with them, but not all the way over. I'd like to see us come to some agreement." Numerous speakers, owners of RVs and nearby homes and shops alike, made their pitches to the council as the line for public comment stretched around two walls of the meeting room and continued to grow. Scott Huffman of Reed Investments, which owns 901 Gilman Street, the old Pyramid Brewing facility where Tesla now operates, said the RVs have thwarted his efforts to attract and satisfy tenants. The businesses that have opened there are, quote, being crushed by the fact that they can't find parking spaces for visitors and employees, he said. Some residents said they've been finding human waste in bags in front of their houses or on the sidewalk since the RVs showed up. The nearest dumping station for RVs are at least a few towns away. And, of course, we don't want to put in restrooms or dumping stations. That would be wrong. Some speakers said the city should just provide sanitation or pump-out facilities instead of banning the vehicles altogether. Others said most RV owners aren't to blame. "I don't use the RV plumbing, so the whole human waste thing is not something I do," said Michael Smith. The PhD student lives in an RV with his girlfriend who attends community college and an elderly man. "I'm the only one who makes enough money to take care of the three of us. Living in an RV is a situation which works best for us now," Smith said. One man told the council it's not only homeless people who'd be affected by a parking ban. He owns a home in Berkeley and can't afford to park his RV, which he uses for travel, anywhere other than in front of his home. as house. The original staff proposal would have affected many more people. It suggested expanding the definition of house car to any vehicle which someone sleeps in and further restricting those. Nobody on the council advocated for that change, so dump your RV and get a car and poop on the street, or pound on the door looking for a bathroom, I guess. Or maybe put your poop in a bag and take it to the city council's next meeting. Cameras, outhouses, part of the illegal dumping initiative, continues the story. The crowd at Thursday's meeting had thinned significantly by the time the council took up the next item of the night, a range of new approaches to handling illegal dumping. While City Manager D. Williams Ridley stressed that recent trash buildup on the Berkeley streets is not solely because of increased homelessness, most of her proposals related to encampments. The council unanimously, without Harrison, who left sick mid-meeting, approved all the city manager's recommendations for a clean and livable commons, i.e. campers get out, homeless go away. The vote, that's my addition, of course. The vote authorizes new lighting and cameras at locations where trash accumulates, new staff to address debris and other negative impacts relating to encampments, 5 new portable bathrooms, that sounds good, and new storage lockers near encampments, and a citizen awareness campaign. Staff did not provide a cost for the additional expenditures. Staff said the city will use a big chunk of the $4 million coming in state emergency homelessness funds to cover this work, but will need to come up with more money as well. Araguin also proposed, that's the mayor, increased fines for illegal dumping and exploring employment opportunities for unhoused people to work for on the cleanup. Hahn proposed a temporary waste pump-out station for RVs while the new policies are getting off the ground. All the suggestions were included in the final vote. And that's Berkeleyside's article, Berkeley City Council Tells RVs to Hit the Road, by Natalie Orenstein.
Thank you.
All you lazy or hard of hearing listeners, or maybe just listeners generally, that was Matt Corby's Brother song from Australia. And the lyrics were, oh, 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 sleep now under my skin, make sure you'll try to conjure the wind and ease my mind. Oh, oh, somebody call out to your brother, he's calling out your name. Oh, oh, hiding under the covers with no one else to blame. Oh, oh, you couldn't help out your own neighbor, you couldn't tell it to his face. You are fucked up by the blame. You cower in the corner, confide in your father. Let it out and say, let it pass away. Sleep now under my skin. Make sure you try to conjure the wind and ease my mind. And I said, oh, oh, oh. Somebody call out to your brother. He's calling out your name. And the lyrics repeat. There's a new verse. Wait there. Pull yourself out of this state, dear. Acknowledge you were a fake here. From there on, you might just grow. Oh, and somebody call out to your brother. He's calling out your name. Oh, 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 hiding under the covers with no one else to blame. Or you couldn't tell out your own neighbor. You couldn't tell it to his face. You were fucked up by the blame. Matt Corby, Brother. And that was a song that apparently won the Australian equivalent of the Grammy. For all you folks interested in those kinds of details, back in 2012. I tried to get through to Berkeley, to Amber of Berkeley, who lives in a vehicle up there. I had some interviews with her about 6 months or a year ago, and she'd been moving her van as the police and the city authorities started their sweep them away, move them along, whack-a-mole approach toward RVs. Couldn't reach her tonight. So instead, here's an earlier interview with Mike Zint, recorded on Saturday afternoon, which kind of gives some updates on stuff in Berkeley. Mike Zint is with the group First They Came for the Homeless, although he's no longer unhoused. He's still very much interested and intensely involved in the fight for basic rights for folks outside. Or at least that's certainly how he sounds when I talk to him. Okay, well, it is March 2nd. It's about 3 o'clock, a little after, on a lazy Saturday, foggy Saturday, whatever. I'm talking with Mike Sint. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm all right, hanging in there. And you are up in Berkeley, and I know that you've been connected for some time with First They Came for the Homeless. You've been a keen observer of local Berkeley events, and sometimes a disgusted observer, occasionally an outraged observer. What have you been observing, and what's up? What's happening up there?
Well, the latest thing is on Thursday, the Berkeley City Council passed an RV ban, meaning that all the RV dwellers, which there's about 300 of them, need to leave town. They are able to get a two-week permit to stay in the city, and that's it.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, this is, you know, the level of you know, I don't even know what to call it at this point. It's obviously it kind of fascist, I think, that the city council wants to drive the poor out. And here's the deal. Okay, if you were to substitute the homeless RV dwellers, substitute homeless for another group of people like Jewish, now the Jewish RV dwellers are banned from Berkeley. That's the extent of what they're doing, except, you know, it's homeless instead of Jewish, so it's okay. You know, and that's where we are in our country, and that's scary. You know, they're banning groups of people from a city.
Do we know what kind of a vote there was on this?
I believe Mary. I know that Cheryl Davila said no, and I believe the one of the new elected ones, Rigel, said no, and Kate Harrison said no. And then there was another vote later on in the night on another issue having to do with illegal dumping and such. And at that vote, I think Kate Harrison had gone home sick.
Mm-hmm.
So the vote against the RVs must have made Kate sick.
Well, I know when I last spoke to RV folks a couple of months ago, maybe it was a number of months ago, you know, they were driving away from the marina area. Any updates on that?
Well, it's the same group. You know, they got driven from the marina. They parked at a restaurant, a closed restaurant parking lot for a period of time, and they got removed from that. And then the shuffle begins, you know, where they have to just find a spot on a city street to park. And sometimes those available spaces aren't, you know, they're not in a place that is going to be accepted by the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was no effort to find the location for these people. You know, it was just get them out of town. We don't want them in town anymore. And in the process of banning just this group of people, they also are now banning oversized vehicles, you know, construction vehicles, work vehicles. They are banning RVs that are owned by Berkeley residents. People who can't afford to store their RV and are parking them in front of their house now have to get rid of the RV or pay storage. So this isn't just about homelessness. It's about control. It's about, you know, a small number of people who have the power, which are typically rich people. They're making the rules for all of us. And it's at the point right now where, you know, they've made rules in every city in the country. Where do we go now? Where do the poor people go? There is no place to go because of these laws and criminalization of the homeless. So we're left in a situation of constant fear of loss of everything we own, you know, getting chased, never any stability, never hope. And the people in these RVs, they got kids that are going to Berkeley schools. Did anybody think about that? No. No, because they're poor people. Nobody cares about the poor people kids.
Well, I know that in Santa Barbara, activist Peter Maron, and I guess in San Diego recently, an anti-RV law was overturned. Berkeley city attorney apparently doesn't care about that, or they found some way to work around that?
No. I don't have anything pleasant to say about the attorneys in Berkeley because, as far as I'm concerned, they're narrowly interpreting the law to justify their actions. You know, it's kind of like what Oakland did when they started raiding the encampments after the Ninth Circuit ruling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are playing word games, and they're making it look like, well, we're complying with the law, but they're not. And nobody's challenging them, or nobody has provided an adequate challenge to what they're doing. You know, Berkeley, there may be a chance to fight back because the coalition that we've developed, it's a pretty big coalition, and if we get, you know, if we get focused and we start working together again, we could have an impact. But the truth is, the city council and the mayor, they're not going to do a damn thing for the poor because it's not about helping the poor. If it was, they would have put the affordable housing in. It's about helping the developer. It's about helping the residents of North Berkeley. It's about helping the people, the affluent voters of Berkeley, who tend to be, you know, the voters. The poor people generally don't vote. They're you know, there's a lot of poor people in Berkeley that don't have an opportunity to vote, even though, you know, they pretend that homeless people can vote. No, it's not that simple. They're too busy trying to find breakfast, lunch, and dinner in a bathroom to go stand in line to vote. You know, it really is difficult. And then poor people, oh, yeah, they get time off from work. Yeah, time off without pay. You know, people want to say, oh, no, you get paid to go vote. No, you don't. You know, our system is so corrupt, and the business owners are about not paying people because they're about keeping money to themselves. Just look at Jeff Bezos. Billionaire doesn't pay a living wage. You know, that's the mindset of our country right now. And every year, there's more homeless. This year, Berkeley did their homeless count and then said, wait, that's low. And then they admitted that there's about 2,000 homeless. Last year, they only admitted to being slightly under 1,000. 2 years ago. So the numbers of homeless have doubled in Berkeley in just short years. That doesn't sound good because in 2 years that means there's going to be 4,000. And 2 years after that there's going to be 6,000 to 8,000. You know, and this cycle of more homeless showing up is going to continue until cities start putting in the affordable housing that nobody wants to do.
What's the impact been of the September Martin v. Boise decision you mentioned earlier, which of course held that, you know, you can't bust someone for sleeping, sitting, or lying, or resting. If you have no specific legal shelter space for them to go to that doesn't have religious qualifications and that is actually open at that time.
Yeah, the thing is, and I don't know if this is accurate, so maybe I shouldn't speak on it, but I've heard that the city of Berkeley leaves one or two beds open to say that they always have an available space and that they're using that as the excuse to do these raids. And they've done a few raids in Berkeley in the last couple of weeks. We have yet to get any of the homeless to actually accept and go challenge these vouchers to find out if they're actually any good. You know, I've heard from some people that they get there and they're turned away. And to me, that's not what the Ninth Circuit said. You need to have adequate shelter for all your homeless.
That's my understanding.
That's how I'm interpreting it. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't have to be interpreted that way, and that's the thing. This ruling, it left a couple of loopholes. The health and safety concerns. If there's health and safety concerns, then, of course, the city can remove the health and safety concerns. And these health and safety concerns are open to interpretation by the city manager's office and the inspectors that are government employees. So it's the government who gets to say what is a health and safety violation, which is how they use dog poop against us. Somebody walked their dog by one of our camps and took a dump. Look, there's feces on the ground. We have to raid. That's a health and safety concern. Another instance, there was a diabetic in camp who was using needles, and he accidentally dropped a needle cap on the ground. He had a sharps container, and he was very responsible. But he dropped a needle cap on the ground. So the city sent the inspectors out to take photos of the needle cap and said, this needle cap is a health and safety concern. Raid the camp. And they raided us. You know, so these are the games that the cities have at their disposal thanks to these very, very vague rulings that the courts are giving. You know, it would be very simple for the court to say, here's the deal. You can't touch a homeless person, his possessions, or in any way impact a homeless person's life in the commons if there is no housing. They didn't say housing. They said shelter. You know, there's a lot of ways they could have worded this to actually stick it to the cities and protect the homeless, but that's not what they did.
Mm-hmm. So, and, of course, the Pottinger decision over in Miami was recently reversed. So.
Well, I didn't hear that.
I said the Pottinger decision, an ancient decision from the early 90s, actually, and then modified in the 890s, which said how actually an officer cannot approach a homeless person in Miami for any life-sustaining behavior, such as not just sleeping, but building a fire, taking a dump, having a structure under which they're lodging that they've maybe set up. All that is no basis for approaching a homeless person in Miami under the Pottinger settlement, as they did it. Actually, it was a ruling, I think, not just a settlement. But that was overturned 2 weeks ago by the Miami federal judge.
So it sounds like the country's going backwards.
Does indeed. What's happening with encampments in Berkeley? Are they going forward?
Well, our encampment is still safe and secure, although the porta potties are under threat right now. The camp has taken the position that the porta potty should stay locked so that the camp can you know, maintain them properly. There's two porta potties out there right now.
This is at Adeline and...
Well, the city put these porta potties in as South Berkeley public bathrooms. And after a little bit of maneuvering as far as where they were placed, they did place them near our camp, about, I don't know, 50 feet from our camp, which is good for the camp.
This is the here-there camp, so to speak?
I didn't get it. What was that?
This is the here-there camp we're talking about?
Yeah, here-there camp. Mm-hmm. So the porta-potties are there, but the camp does not want a bunch of people using them and destroying the bathrooms, because if that happens, then, of course, the city's going to use that as the excuse to remove the bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So they have been protecting and cleaning the bathrooms now for over a year. The city has been coming out for about the last month demanding that those locks be taken off because they're receiving complaints. And I have to take the position of the city on this because I have seriously disabled people in that camp.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go chase a bathroom around. Mm-hmm. You know, so those porta potties being 50 feet away is actually helping the camp. But that's not the goal. The goal is to get rid of the homeless. So, you know, the city's going to look for any excuse to make things more difficult for the homeless so that they decide to move along to another city.
Yeah, there were other camps in Berkeley, of course. It's not just that one. Any reports from any of them?
Yeah, actually, we had our anniversary party. party or 2-year anniversary party last week here there, and I ran into a few students from a junior high school, and I believe maybe a chaperone or a teacher was with them, and they were doing a film. It appears that they have a homeless camp near their school, and they, I don't want to say want to adopt it, but they want to work with the homeless in the camp, and they want to try to make it a better situation for the camp. So they came to us for advice on how to help the campers, and I thought that was really, really cool to have a school, instead of saying we need to get rid of that camp because we don't want that around our kids. The kids are out there going, we want to help these people. And because of that, you know, I think there's hope maybe in 10 years when those kids grow up. But right now, current politicians, there's no hope for the poor.
Mm-hmm. And would you say, I mean, it's always seemed to me, at least in the last few years, at least in Oakland, the number of camps that's been emerging is growing, I don't know about exponentially, but significantly. How's it looking in Berkeley?
I can't really say how many camps there are. I saw a list, I think that was like 90 camps or something, but then the thing is, what makes a camp a camp? You know, who gets to say what a camp is? Is this the number of tents? You know, I don't know how they determine what a camp is. A tent on a sidewalk, I don't consider a camp, though. Hmm. You know, and there are nicely, when I'm driving around Berkeley, it's great. There are individual camp spots set up in all areas of Berkeley right now. One tent here, one tent there. And these spots where the homeless have set up, every spot I've seen is clean. You know, these guys are doing a beautiful job keeping their campsites clean. They're keeping their gear inside the tent. They're not accumulating debris. They're not blocking sidewalks. They're doing exactly what it is they need to do to demonstrate that they should be allowed to do this if there's no shelter available. Now, of course, there's a couple of drug camps, but that's just the nature of homelessness. There's always going to be, you know, just like in a house community, there's going to be drug addicts on the street as well as house. So they tend to, you know, group up because they're all interested in the same things, which is, you know, getting high or whatever. But I'm not hearing a lot about how dirty and nasty these places are. What I'm hearing is there's a lot of dumping going on, and now the city is finally admitting that it's illegal dumping and the homeless are not responsible. But then on Thursday they said that they're going to be putting in cameras and doing cleanups on these areas where there's a lot of trash accumulation. And that's coming out of homeless services budget. Wait a second. If they're admitting that the homeless aren't doing it, why are they using homeless service money to stop it? Why aren't they just using that money to help the homeless? Because it's not about helping the homeless. It was never about helping the homeless. It's about helping the housed. That's it. Let's clean up the city and let's take it out of the homeless person's relief fund. But come on, these people are dying in the streets, and you're taking their money to clean up a spot that a contractor dumped a bunch of construction material at? You know, oh, well, it happened to be near the homeless camp, so that shower enclosure must have been from the homeless camp. What? That's what's going on.
Now, you mentioned...
It's happening everywhere.
Mike, you mentioned in the past that you were more optimistic about the kinds of connections between homeless camps, supporters, and in not just in Berkeley, but in Oakland and other places as well.
Well, I'm seeing that there's people that are starting to fight back, and they're starting to group up, and they're starting to say, hey, stop. You know, we're not what you're saying we are. And, you know, Oakland is like Lake Merritt just got cleaned up. They did all around Lake Merritt. Turns out Obama came to town, so they had to make all the homeless black people go away so Obama didn't see them, which I think is utterly ridiculous. You know, if Obama comes to town and he sees that, you know, I think it's like 80% of Oakland homeless are black people. Why can't the president, the former president, see that? Why does it have to be removed? He should see that stuff. And maybe he should start speaking up for cities that are gentrifying the black neighborhoods. Berkeley's doing the same thing. Oakland's been doing it for years. You know, and I'm sitting in Oakland. I don't live in Berkeley. They stuck me in Oakland when they housed me. I'm way on the east side of Oakland. And I'm sitting here looking at my neighborhood, and there used to be a bunch of RVs out here up and down the street. There's a lot of open parking. They're all gone now. I don't know what happened to them, but they got removed from this area. We're right on the border of San Leandro. When you cross the border to San Leandro, you don't see any homeless people. So it's like they're working their way in from San Leandro exactly a great neighborhood. It's not a bad neighborhood. You don't get shot at or anything, but, you know, you can see the criminals out there. You can see the drug dealing going on. It's just, you know, it's everyday life in Oakland. But, you know, what I'm seeing and hearing is Oakland is doing things that I would consider criminal. You can't stick people in tool sheds that are made out of toxic material. We've already got people complaining of respiratory issues and other things. And these materials, when you read the safety data sheets on them, it's right there on the safety data sheets. They've put humans into tool sheds for $3,800 more. They could have purchased tough shed tiny homes and put homeless people in tiny homes, but the city was too cheap to spend $3,800 more per unit. So now they're killing off the homeless again.
You know, so now, also, Mike,
okay,
explain.
If you rape somebody in there too.
Mike, explain the difference between a tool shed and a tiny home.
Oh, okay. I don't know what the construction material is on the tiny homes, but I'm assuming that it is approved material for habitation. Okay? Now, the tool sheds, on the other hand, are made with pressure-treated lumber on the floor. And I checked the website. They say all their floors are pressure-treated lumber. Now, there's two types of pressure-treated lumber. One is treated with arsenic. That's the old stuff that used to get kids sick in the playground. They stopped using that for a lot of stuff, but it's still used in some cases. And it'll be marked on the wood. The other type of pressure-treated is done with, it's copper, I believe. I'm guessing it's copper, I can't remember. But whatever that substance is that they're using, it's okay to be around it. You can touch it. It's not absorbed through the skin. But if dust gets into your lungs, there's an issue. Or if you ingest it, there's an issue. Now, come on. It's the floor. You know the dust is being created every time you take a step. And you know it's up in the air. And it's going to settle on your cooking surfaces, and it's going to be inhaled. Okay, that's one thing. Now, the outer walls, I don't know what they're made out of. Probably some inexpensive type of lumber or some material that's manufactured that's going to outgas. You know, but I couldn't get past the fact that they were using pressure-treated wood.
Gotcha. If folks want more information about, you know, the current status of a pushback by civil rights organizations, homeless folks themselves, sympathizers, where should they go to get more information?
That I can't answer because I am currently out of the loop. I've been working on our art show, which is coming up in a week. Holy cow. Yeah, we're having an art show at Expressions Art Gallery, Homeless Art Show, where homeless artists will be on display. So that's been my project for the last 4 months.
Will any of that be online?
Yeah, you can go on our Facebook page. It's pinned to the top of the Facebook page.
And your Facebook page is?
First They Came for the Homeless.
Gotcha.
And then you can also contact Expressions Gallery in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an actual, gallery. It's really cool because the homeless artists who got in, they can now say that they've been shown in the gallery and put that in their resume.